All right, you're back in the DFSR here with the PGA podcast, special PGA podcast. It is Tuesday, June 12th. I'm Doug Norrie. I'm here with PGA expert and DFSR main golf contributor, Chris Durrell. Chris, how's it going, man?
It's going great. I love these I love these major weeks. Got the U.S. Open, 118th annual U.S. Open this week, so pretty pumped up.
Yeah, no, man, this is why we're jumping on here. We're going to make PGA more, well, Chris has been writing steady PGA content for years for us, but we're going to make PGA podcast content just more available over the rest of this year and hopefully into next year as we start to develop a PGA projection system. We're going to talk about that a little bit as we go. Obviously, the majors are the times to get really excited. DraftKings and FanDuel both offering really big contests. The majors obviously just draw people in because it can be appointment television on a Sunday, especially if... Well, I was going to say Tiger Woods. We can talk about him. We can talk about him later. But the if real name golfers are in a sweat down the stretch, and even like your most just basic generic golf fan can usually find a reason on Sunday to turn into the U.S. Open. So we'll break some of it down. We'll backtrack a little bit to last week. We had done a quick podcast about the FedEx Open or the FedEx St. Jude's Classic, excuse me, and how did it turn out for you last week? I could talk a little bit about how our system sort of worked out, and then we can talk a little bit about the U.S. Open.
Yeah, it was more of a break-even week for me. I had a lot. I didn't play cash games, first of all, which I said I was going to start playing a lot more. But I went the Mickelson-Stenson route last week, kind of pairing them together. They were a little bit cheaper than DJ. I did have some DJ, which that was kind of the reason why I ended up breaking even, just because he kind of ran away with the field a little bit, or ran away with the tournament holdout in the last hole. So definitely those that were heavy on DJ... had a great week, but because of my Stenson Mickelson, and they both made the cut, they didn't perform the way I thought. I thought maybe both had top 10 upside, but overall, this wasn't too bad. I was coming off a heater the week before, so kind of looking to get back on that track this week.
Yeah, I entered a very limited contest because I wanted to test out our new system, and our FanDuel contest was actually in a real, I mentioned this on the baseball podcast earlier, but it was in a real top end GBP sweat with just the top overall lineup, because it had DJ, it had Stricker and Sink and a couple other guys. And then I was joking with you off the air that's just giving me totally irrational confidence when it comes to golf now. Like, now I just think I'm a just complete and utter expert at just about every single thing that's going on with links. So everyone can enjoy this until whatever the results come in for the U.S. Open, and then I'll either be more confident or I'll come back down to earth. So we'll kind of see how it went. So overall, was able to cash games and GPPs actually with some of the lineups. And I'm going to talk a little bit at the end of this podcast about some thoughts about ownership and some thoughts about data-driven stuff. But I do want to get into the U.S. Open because that is what people likely tuned in to hear about. So if you want to hear some more stuff about our system, stay tuned to the end, and I'll break down some of what I think might be an interesting case for going a different direction with golf. But U.S. Open at Shinnecock, walk me through the course. We're going to talk about a couple major things here. We're going to talk about the course. You're going to break it down, what to look for in the way the course plays. I know you had mentioned wanting to talk about weather. I think that's going to be very important leading into this week. And then obviously we'll roll through a bunch of golfers that you like in your article, and then I have some questions about guys that this new system is drawing out, and I want to see if you agree or disagree with it. So yeah, roll us through what we can expect from the course here in Shinnecock. And I don't believe they played here for what, like 3 or 4 years?
They haven't played here since 2004, since the U.S. Open, and it's kind of...
I meant to say 10 or 15 years.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So it's Shinnecock Hills Golf Club. It's in, where are we here? I forgot the city here just for a second. But Southampton, New York. So, hasn't been here since 2004, and a lot of people will remember that, as it was kind of the year that they let it run away. There wasn't enough water on the green, especially a lot of people will remember hole number 7, where guys were chipping up to the, almost, you know, like right beside the pin, and the ball would just roll back off the green. They couldn't get the ball to stop at all. And there was a lot of complaints going there. So they've kind of been, I guess you could say, shunned for a few years, but they are getting another chance here. A lot of people saying, you know, they're getting a mulligan. It's been here 3 times in the past. They claim it's the oldest golf course in America, going back, you know, into the late 1800s there. So it's a very classic course, but there has been a couple changes since that 2004 event. You know, they widened the fairways a little bit, just because they added just over 400 yards of distance as well. So it's playing about 7,440 yards this week, and it is a par 70, so that adds to the length as well. So a couple things, you know, I did say they widened the fairway. There is some key landing spots where they did tighten it up a little bit, and outside of the fairways, it's going to be important to hit the fairways this week, because outside of those fairways, and I posted some videos on my Twitter account, at Jaeger_bombs9, the rough is absolutely gnarly and crazy. For the first couple yards, you know, it's going to be very tough to get out. Some guys that maybe hit it long are going to be hitting wedges out of that rough, so it's going to, you know, play to the bombers a little bit, where they're not going to be so bad a couple yards off the fairway, because they're going to be using wedges where a lot of the short hitters are going to be, you know, in their 7, 6, 7, 8 irons. But outside of that, if you're going to be offline any more than that, pretty much people were throwing balls down into that rough, and you can't even see those. So it's pretty much just a chip it out onto the fairway and go from there, which is going to lead to a lot of big numbers. And if the course plays dry this week with, you know, super fast greens, I think we're only going to see, you know, in that maybe 10 players under par this week. But we have seen in the past at some of these U.S. Opens where there's only been a couple players under par, and that could play this week. But if it gets some rain, if it softens up the greens a little bit, softens up the course a little bit, you know, we may see a bit of a scoring fest. So it's really important to pay close attention to the weather. And with a par 70, it's going to be 12 par 4s out there on the course. So par 4 scoring is automatically going to be boosted. The par 5s are quite long, 589-yard hole number 5. And then you got the 16th hole at 616 yards. So we got some long par 5s. Those are definitely going to be holes where you're going to want to, you know, players are going to want to get their birdies, because the birdies on some of these par fours are going to be very difficult. And like I said, the greens are big and undulated, so not just strokes gain approach that I'm looking at this week, but I'm also looking at proximity, because you're going to want to be, if you're not in the right portion of the green where the pin is, you're going to be looking at some three putts. And I've been hearing a lot of, you know, listening to PGA Tour radio and watching some videos of guys that are out there in the practice rounds. There is some runoffs to these greens. So, and if the wind is going to be up, and it looks like it's going to be, they're, you know, probably going to be in that 50 to 55% range of average greens in regulation hit, which is going to put a lot of emphasis on scrambling as well. So I guess most of all, I'm going to be looking at ball striking this week off the tee plus approach shots. But then those are going to be the guys, you know, for upside. Obviously, the guys that are going to hit more greens are going to have more birdie chances. They're going to be ones that are going to be lurking at the top of the leaderboard on Sunday. But for, you know, looking at cash games, looking at guys that are going to make the cut, you're going to want a guy that's going to scramble really well this week, because there is going to be a lot of places where you're going to need to get up and down to save par, in some instances even save bogey this week.
Let's rewind real quick when we look at, because last week we looked at, when we looked at the FedEx St. Jude's, and in the past when we've done other podcasts looking at different courses, we've been able to do a course by course comparison, because heck, a lot of these tournaments are played at the same course year after year. Even like the Masters, a major is played at Augusta every single year. What do you do when we have a situation like here at Shinnecock where it hasn't been played in, you know, 14 years? And how do we do course comps? Is there a way, you know, do you feel that U.S. Open courses sort of play the same year over year independent of where they are, because they're just making it difficult? Do you look at other courses along the tour that do offer comps for this specific course? Because this is one of those ones where you love to have a historical track record of the guys walking up and down the same 18 holes, and we just don't seem to have it here with this course this week.
Yeah, I look at it, you know, I try and not get into a whole bunch of course comps, because every course is, you know, going to be a little bit different. You got your links course, so they did tear down all the trees here at Shinnecock Hills, so it's like a full link, so that's where the wind really plays huge. So kind of looking at some Open Championship, like British Open Championship, and U.S. Open as well, just because the USGA usually sets these courses up very hard, so I mean the difficulty factor is there. You know, when I start looking into, like, there's going to be a lot of wind this week, it looks like, so start looking at data at players that are good in the wind, but it is tough, and I think you can kind of take advantage of it in some areas, because, you know, some guys are going to be driven by narrative, and when you do that, I think you can kind of fade a few of those guys that may be just a bit higher owned, and look for a player, you know, with the same skill set that maybe isn't being talked about as much, just because of a few things. But we don't really have that course history this week, so on my cheat sheet anyway, I just looked at like the last 5 years of U.S. Open history on there. I weighed it very, very small, but I do like to look at guys that have a good history at U.S. Open, because it is a very difficult golf tournament, one of the toughest in the world for sure. They always set it up hard, you know, you got that gnarly rough, you've usually got that wind, and so it's kind of a combination of things this week, which makes it a little bit tougher in your research, but definitely may take away, and I think it may even out a lot of the ownership in some of the tiers when looking at some of the players, because you don't have that one guy that, oh, he's destroyed this course over the years. He's got five straight top tens. Phil Mickelson, that kind of got me last week, because he did really well at the course last week. So I think it takes away some of that narrative as well.
I definitely had a more difficult time factoring in some current course or course history for some of these golfers with some of our new data points, because that was just a struggle, like you said, to find good comps. Anything else we should know about the weather before we start talking about some of these golfers? Or do you think that we're kind of covered knowing, or are we waiting to hear if it rains? I mean, how much is that going to factor what you do to change any of your projections? Or do you feel like we're sort of working weather independent at this point?
As of right now, it looks like precipitation, there isn't going to be any, so I'm not a whole lot concerned on that front, but wind is definitely going to be a factor. I added a updated tab to my cheat sheet this week, just kind of looking at the weather, and I use windfinder.com, and I actually found a weather station from Windfinder that is right beside Shinnecock Hills, so it's pretty darn accurate, and I don't really look at Saturday, Sunday right now, you know, unless you're playing those showdowns on the weekend once guys make the cut. But what I'm looking at mostly is the Thursday, Friday wave to see if you can maybe pick out, you know, one of the waves, like the Thursday morning guys always play Friday afternoon, the Thursday afternoon guys always play Friday morning. See if you can pick that out. So Thursday looks pretty even between, you know, 14 and 18 miles an hour throughout the day, 20 mile an hour wind gusts. So it's kind of going to be tough for everyone. But on Friday, the early guys in the morning are going to be contending with 20 to 22 mile an hour winds, it looks like, and 25 to 30 mile an hour gusts. So it's going to be pretty darn windy in the morning wave. And then it looks like about, you know, 11 a.m. somewhere around there, the wind really starts going down to 10 mile an hour. And by 2 p.m., they've got it predicted right around that 2 mile an hour range. So it kind of drops off the table. So I'm going to update that again tomorrow and just keep an eye on that. But right now, I'm going to possibly be looking at some players in that Thursday morning, Friday afternoon wave. More specifically looking at guys that are going to be starting around 11 to 2 p.m. I'm going to kind of be playing in that window on Friday to, you know, maybe they can avoid the wind. And if there's going to be, and this does happen in a lot of, you know, looking at the Open Championship, there has been in the past a lot of tournaments where, you know, like the year, I believe it was, geez, I forget who was up there at top of the, I know Stenson and Mickelson were up there. You know, there's a big gap there, and usually it could be a stroke or two difference on Friday. So definitely be looking at stacking some guys in that Friday afternoon wave for sure.
All right, let's talk about some of the golfers that you picked out that your model likes in terms of possibly for GPP, for cash games. Like I said, DraftKings and FanDuel offering just a ton of huge contests this week that's going to try to entice. Basically, you know, the kind of said this at the top, but the majors definitely bring in the folks who really haven't played a ton of PGA DFS just throughout the year or whatever. You know, they kind of save their entertainment money for these weekends where they just know there's going to be some of these high-end tournaments so they can have something of a sweat. So understanding that it does seem like the pricing might be a little bit softer, but who are some of the guys that you are drawing out in terms of good value on either DraftKings or FanDuel?
Well, of course, you've got Dustin Johnson at the top. He's coming off the win last week, so he's in excellent form. He's been good at the U.S. Open venues for the most part. He won it. He missed the cut last year, but he won Oakmont in 2016. He was runner-up in Chambers Bay in 2015 when Spieth won. Probably should have won that one, but he kind of flubbed the putting at the end of the round. He's been a lot better putting since then. He was fourth in 2014 at Pinehurst. I mean, he hits on every single stat that I'm looking at this week on my sheet. He's first in the strokes gained off the tee. He's first in strokes gained ball striking, which is off the tee plus approach. He's up there in proximity. He's 14th in proximity, second in par four scoring, second in bogey avoidance. He's good around the green. He's 35th around the green, which is still better than average. It's not elite by any means, but then you start looking at the scrambling a little bit, which is just kind of a percentage of how many times a player gets up and down. He's sixth, and of course he's first in birdie or better percentage too. So he's the first guy that stands out. He's number one in my sheet this week. I mentioned him in the article. Another guy is Brooks Koepka. He was out with a wrist injury earlier in the year, but he's really come on with his form. He almost won a couple weeks ago. He tailed off last week, had a bad final round, but he was in contention the whole week. And he's a guy that stands out. He's played four U.S. Opens. He was fourth in 2014. T18 in 2015, T13 in 2016, and he won at Erin Hills last year. So he's got a good track record there, and he's only 9,000, so he's a player I'm going to kind of be building around. And then kind of looking at that weather, like I said, he falls into that. He's 125 tee time on Friday, so he falls into that group of guys that I'm going to be looking at stacking in that afternoon wave. So that was really positive seeing that this week.
Let me just jump in on Koepka real quick, just in terms of what our model has him and why it likes him, specifically from a tournament. This was not one of the guys I was going to bring up, but I do want to mention a couple of things that Koepka hits on here is he has, over the last 2 years, he has a really high standard deviation. And the reason that I think that matters for, you know, this is, by the way, this is a round-to-round standard deviation, not a tournament-to-tournament. So the round-to-round standard deviation, I think, at least in my opinion, matters because guys with higher standard deviations likely have their, you can tell me if I'm wrong here, but likely have their prices somewhat depressed because they have, like what happened to him at FedEx last week, they have that bad final round that finishes. Now, again, the U.S. Open pricing was out before the end of the FedEx, I believe, right?
So it was.
So this is not a perfect comp here. But when you have these bad rounds, like these sort of blow-up rounds, your price likely stays somewhat depressed because one, it's a little harder to win when you have a blow up round. And two, you just score less points during that round. And it strikes me as he has this highest standard deviation of anybody in that top, in the 9,000 and up range. But he's at the very lowest end of it. And I think, am I wrong in thinking that that's the kind of thing that sets you up perfectly to win at slightly lower cost than your peers, right? Cause like his overall average round to round is right in line with a lot of these other guys. It's a little bit worse because he's had a couple of these blow up rounds, but that's led to a higher standard deviation, which means he's at a lower price with just like with upside to win, makes a lot of cuts. Is that line of thinking correct on Koepka? Because this is the case to make for him to get in, maybe buying low for a possible just GPP win.
Yeah, no, I think you nailed it there. Just that deviation alone, even though that maybe takes you away a little bit when it comes to cash games. But he is a high birdie maker. You know, he's got the approach shots. He's excellent around the green. He's been good on the putter lately. So, but yeah, that one round kind of gets him. So if he puts four rounds together, you know, he's a guy that possibly could run away with the field. He played very well at the U.S. Open last year. So it seems like he really gets his concentration level. And he himself even said that he feels overlooked, you know, especially in these big fields, just because there is so many elite players. He's not really a guy that gets talked about as one of the elite players, but I think he's right on the cusp of that, you know, the Dustin Johnsons and stuff like that. So definitely on my radar. I mean, he did sneak into the top 10. He is ninth in the official world golf rankings now. But, you know, even just looking at my DK average over his last five events, he's only averaging 67.5 DK points, which is 31st in the field. So I mean, that takes him down a little bit, and that has a lot to do with that standard deviation from round to round. So yeah, I think you nailed it right there.
All right, give us some other guys that your system kind of locked in on, that you, and maybe some guys that you wrote up in your article as well.
Yeah, I talked about Justin Thomas as well. He just lost the world golf ranking number one to Dustin Johnson. They've been kind of going back and forth, and I think that continues. He's coming off a tremendous year last year. He won five tournaments. He won the whole FedEx Cup to $10 million payday. So he came into this year. He's doing really good. He's got two wins already at the CJ Cup and the Honda Classic. And the Honda, you know, that's another tough course. So he's played well on tough courses. So he's in the wrong wave when it comes to wins. So I think a lot of people, if they're going to be going this stacking route, his ownership might drop a little bit to what it was earlier in the week just because of that wind. But he's got the distance to get it done. He's got the whole complete game. He's number three in my overall model. He's top five in par four scoring. He's top five in birdie better percentage. 31st in proximity. Sixth in strokes gained approach. Third in ball striking. So he's got the game to get it done. So he's definitely going to be there. And he had his best U.S. Open last year. He finished ninth at Erin Hills as well. And then down in that $9,000 range again, I don't know if he's standing on your sheet or not, but Justin Rose, his all-around game lately has just been amazing. He's got the form coming in. He's coming off a win in the top six. He 69th and 75th his last two U.S. Opens, but he won 2013. He's got that 27th, 12th. He's done well overall, and just his all-around game at 9,900, I think. He's going to be popular this week for sure, but DraftKings scoring over the last five tournaments, he's at 93.6 points per tournament, so definitely liking him there.
And then there's a guy. Yeah, the Thomas is he's grouped in right. And he actually he and Rose have about the same projection in our model. So if that's the case, you're going to probably want to go with Rose. For my purpose, it would be like for 1,100 less. I don't see like if that's the only thing that seems like having trouble paying up for Thomas is that he's just very expensive, right? Like so, you get Justin Johnson at 11.7, which is. Even with some softer pricing for cash games, that's a very difficult salary to fit into cash games, especially when you have a field of all the best golfers. Am I wrong in that thinking? I mean, that's the only thing that's kind of keeping Dustin Johnson and actually probably Thomas out of what I might put together for cash games, just because the field is so strong, and that's kind of the other thing you get at these majors.
Well, you know, I kind of with the softer pricing in events like this, I don't mind actually. Like in a normal event. I'll probably go, you know, starting at 9K, low 10K range when I'm looking at cash games. But in these events like this, like where the top tier, like Dustin Johnson, isn't really separated by a whole bunch at 11.7, I will look at one of those guys just because I think there is some values down in that low 7, 6K range. You can get two of those guys to help you get that win upside of those top guys in the field. So this is one of the times where for cash games, I will go more of a, you call it a stars and scrubs, but it's not so much stars and scrubs this week just because the guys in that low 7, high 6K range aren't really scrubs to me. They're, you know, just because it's more of an elite field, I think there's softer pricing, and DraftKings does that a little more than FanDuel just because, you know, they're trying to drive up how many outside, you know, not intense DFS golf guys that play every week come in and play. They want more public to come in and play, and it's a lot easier when you can fit those top guys in your lineup, so they kind of set their pricing up that way. So this week's a little bit different for me looking at cash games than most weeks.
Hit me up with some more of your golfers, and I'm going to run you down a list of guys that I'm kind of looking at, that our system's looking at. I want to see if you agree or disagree, but hit us up with some more guys that you thought that stood out according to your models.
Paul Casey, definitely. He seems very underpriced at 8,000 this week on DraftKings, number 11 in the world. Been playing really good lately. He's eighth in strokes gained ball striking. He just stands out in so many areas. A lot of people, you know, would say that he maybe isn't a winner. He won the Valspar, and he's made so many cuts. Like going back, I see one missed cut going all the way back to the Sony at the start of last year. So he's made every single cut in a stroke play event besides one at the RBC Heritage. So he's very consistent. He's a guy, if you're building cash game lineups, almost has to be in your core for cash game lineups.
Well, let me say this.
I mentioned that he stood out in the model this week when looking at the projections.
He not only stands out, he has the second highest projection behind Dustin Johnson. So take that for what it's worth. These are still very new inputs, and I'm you know, willing to understand that there's going to be some overlooked pieces of elements just that are going to lead to some maybe possibly weird, because like the thing with PGA is these guys are all for as good as Dustin Johnson is, and he actually just stands out, these guys are all really tightly grouped, and I don't know if that's just the nature of golf in terms of the projections. I don't know if that's just the nature of golf in general, is that like these guys are just so close together, and you know, the best golfer wins twice, and the fifth best golfer, you know, comes in third a couple times, and that's kind of the difference in their overall rankings. I know I'm kind of glossing over the reality of it, but in terms of just the overall numbers, these guys are all very close. Paul Casey, you know, things that our model really likes about him, guy just makes cuts, 124 rounds, only two missed cuts over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Very low standard deviation relative to the other guys in his price range, which I know doesn't matter for overall. The price range doesn't matter for the overall projection. And then just been good at the U.S. Open over the last couple of years. Now, did miss one of the cuts at one of the U.S. Open, so he gets dinged for that. But overall, just in terms of overall safety and in that price tier, yeah, Paul Casey is 100% of the guy that I'm going to play in cash games. Definitely on DraftKings at 8,000. It's probably a little closer at 10.5 on FanDuel, and I can't remember if he was in that lineup or not. No, he's in there too. So he was. He's a guy that I'm going to play in cash games according to this new model. Basically 100%. Who else am I missing?
Yeah, so another guy I like more for GPPs, but he has shown up a ton, is Bryson DeChambeau. He helped me win a bunch 2 weeks ago. I won an outright with him. I almost won a tournament. He's fifth in my model this week, and I wanted to go because my model looks at 95% stats from this year, and then I kind of throw in 5% stats from last year just to kind of open up a little bit bigger of a sample size. So what I wanted to do with him, just to kind of check things out, is over on Fantasy National, you can actually break down last 4, 8, 12, 24, 50, and 100 rounds of different stats. So I went and built a custom model over there. Same stats I'm using for my model on my sheet, and plug it in. And he shows up in almost actually everyone in the last 4, 8, 12, 24, and 50 rounds. He shows up inside the top 10 in my custom stats model over there. So that just, you know, made me boost him even more. It is an elite field with a bunch of elite players, but he's coming in. I don't know how owned he's going to be. Probably not enough where I'm going to actually have to worry about it. I don't think he's going to be more than, you know, like 15% owned in some of the big tournaments. And it depends what kind of tournament you play. A lot of people are going to be playing the Millie Maker or the $4 20 max this week. And I just don't think he's going to be... You probably fall between that 10 and 15% this week.
Okay, there's a couple guys that I want to talk about just in terms of who our new system likes. And I'm gonna go back and just real quick just talk about the inputs that we have here. So we have a couple years worth of data on just how good golfers are compared to average. We have some standard deviation stuff, some course history stuff where applicable. So with this time around we had to fudge it a little bit. And I wanted to get your opinion on a couple guys that, you know, these new data points are drawing out that you haven't mentioned, and I want to know if we're just completely off the rails on some of these guys, or if it maybe does pass the sniff test. And the one guy that's showing up when I run the optimal lineups on FanDuel and DraftKings is Cantlay, and he's coming very cheap relative to where we have his projection. And he's a guy I've been doing, you know, when I'm putting together cash games, he's a guy showing up everywhere. I've been doing some draft.com drafts, because those are sort of addicting when you just start rolling down the hill on drafting guys. He's a guy
that like sort of with air quotes.
It's completely addicting. And especially too, like I'm just, because I don't have a lot of, because I don't have a ton of preconceived notions about guys, I'm just going straight off the projections. And Cantlay is actually a guy that you would call probably I'm reaching for, but is it a reach? I mean, we have him right now, Frank, as the sixth overall highest projected guy. Is that crazy? He's 7,700 on DraftKings. He's a guy that's in every one of my cash game lineups right now. Is it crazy, or do you think it's onto something here? What are your thoughts here on Cantlay?
No, I think he probably stands out here just because he's been consistent. Like, he's played 12 stroke play events this year. He won the Shriners. He's had a bunch of top 15s. He's only missed two cuts, most recently the Fort Worth Invitational. Also missed the Masters. So that's a totally different tournament. So I'm not really concerned about that. It was an elite field too, but not really concerned about that because, I mean, you look back, he made it all the way to the Tour Championship last year, and he's kind of in a comeback. He's a kind of a feel-good story. Had some injuries coming into the PGA Tour. Lost his friend and caddy who died in a hit-and-run accident. So he's kind of a feel-good story, and he really bounced back big time getting back into the Tour last year. And like I said, he made it to the Tour Championship, finished 20th there, and he did really good throughout the playoffs. And those are elite fields as well. Those are your top players in the game. So I'm not too concerned about the field or anything. He's coming off a fourth at the Memorial. And looking statistically at Cantlay, he really stands out for me there as well. He's top 15 in strokes gained ball striking, which comes in at 13th off the tee, 25th on the approach shots. Little bit down on the proximity, but a couple of the proximity ranges that I am looking at are 175 to 200 and 200 plus, just because of the longer course. I think there's going to be a lot of long irons coming into play, especially, like I said, they did widen the fairways, but in some of the landing areas, they made them, you know, a little bit tighter. So hitting the fairways, I think the guys are going to be they're going to have some long approaches, and he's top 25 and 175 to 200 yards and 200 plus yards. And then birdie or better percentage, which kind of correlates heavily with your DraftKings score, and he's 18th. So I don't think it's out of the realm at all to have him very high in the system this week at all.
He gets helped a little bit. It's funny. He gets helped by not having ever played in the U.S., or at least in the last 3 years, has not played in the U.S. Open. So
right.
When that happens, I kind of just defer to what you've done overall. And so in this case, it'd be hard to imagine he'd be playing so much better at the U.S. Open than he's played overall. So I think he's probably being helped a little bit. So if there's any like sort of outlier piece of data, I think it's that. I think it's that he just has no course history here and been good everywhere else. And that's probably what's helping him relative to his price. And I could see probably him being under-owned. My guess is he's under-owned relative to the field when it comes to this model compared to what other people run in cash games. Another guy I want to throw out there.
Next guy,
yeah.
Something else that stands out with Cantlay for me this week is he is on the positive side of that, looking at the wind and the tee times for Friday afternoon, should that forecast stand up. And even if he, you know, sees a little bit of the wind, even on that Thursday, like everyone's going to be about in the same wind, he's gained strokes around the green, which is kind of looking at your scrambling and stuff, in four straight and six of his last seven tournaments. So that's positive. His putting's been down a little bit, but, you know, make a few putts. Putting's a lot of high variance when you're looking at putting. Guys that really suck at putting can just, boom, all of a sudden stand out in a tournament. Sure. So I'm not really looking at that too closely. I don't usually ever factor strokes gained putting in because it can come around quick, especially when you're looking at GPPs and stuff. So all the rest of the game is there. So yeah, all moving right on.
Definitely making me feel better about him. Here's another one I want to throw out there. System likes him a little bit cheaper. Tommy Fleetwood. Fleetwood is a guy who looks like he's got he's showing up more into like a tournament model piece of it than he is into cash games. Although he's ranked pretty high here. Is this a case where, you know, he has less rounds played than some of the other guys, and that can because I guess he's been playing what in the European Tour more yes. than he's played yet. So his rounds compared to other guys in his similar price range, he has 66 rounds, and no one, I mean everyone else basically around him has 80 or more. Most are in the hundreds. Do you think this is a case of just not enough sample size? Been decent at the last two U.S. Opens that he's played at. Do you think this is a case of just the sample size being too small, or is this a guy that I should tune into? It's probably a guy I'm looking for a little bit more in tournaments than in cash games.
Yeah, it's not really the same case as Afi Barnrat from last week. He had a lot smaller sample size. Fleetwood's played 9 tournaments on the PGA Tour this season, going back to the HSBC Champions. He's only missed one cut at the Wells Fargo, and he hasn't finished outside of 37th in any other of those tournaments, with 3 top 10s and 6 top 25s. So he's been really consistent in his tournaments, but like you said, he kind of fits more in a GPP model, and I agree with that because looking at his strokes gained approach lately, he's lost strokes on the approach in 3 of his last 4 tournaments, but looking back at 5 tournaments, he's gained over 4 strokes on the approach in 2 of those where he was good. So it kind of seems like a little bit of a roller coaster when looking at his approaches, but he's decent putter on there as well. So if he's hitting those greens, especially on the proximity side of things, I think he's definitely got that top 10 upside this week for sure.
Let me run by. We're gonna get out of here because we're starting to run long here. Let me run by my DraftKings cash game lineup to see if it passes for you. I got Rose, Rahm, Paul Casey, Cantlay, Matt Kuchar. We didn't talk about him. Maybe if you have an opinion there, and then Brendan Steele, who we did talk about. So a lot of the guys were covered either through what you thought in your picks, or maybe some of the other ways that we dissected where to go here. I have 500 remaining. I don't know if you think that's too much. If there's a way to pivot up from some of these guys, Kuchar is the one guy we didn't talk about. How does this lineup kind of stack up for you in cash? And do you think I'm leaving too much on the table with 500 left over?
You know, the only guy I'd really pivot off of there would be Rahm. He's more of a GPP play for me. He's kind of down in the strokes gain approach side of things. He's on the wrong side of the wind thing on Friday. There's really no, because you've already got Rose, so $500 more, you can't get up to Ricky Fowler or anything, who I like a little bit better when it comes to cash games over Rahm, but you would need 700 there. You know, you could go down from Steele. And Steele just kind of falls into that. He's been consistent. He's a good ball striker. He's on the right side of the wind there as well this week. At 6,900, though, that price is just seems way too cheap for him. I mean, you could go down to Charles Hall, but that's only $100 difference. So overall, I think I really do like your cash game lineup there.
Yeah, I think Rahm falls into this kind of, I think Rahm falls into a price play more than anything else, because it's not like we are having an overwhelming projection on him. He's overall something like, I guess he's 4th overall with guys like, you know, Matsuyama coming up a little higher, though I'm a little worried about the deviation there. And then, like you said, you can't pay up. I really can't pay up for anyone else in this price range that I don't already have. And I'm not even sure if that'd be correct anyway. So, all right, we'll see how it goes. Chris, what should we keep an eye out for you over the next couple days? We're recording this on Tuesday afternoon, so we still have all of Wednesday to go before the U.S. Open kicks off. Where should we keep an eye out for you putting out information and other things to keep, anything else to keep an eye on before we tee off Thursday morning?
Yeah, I'm going to be heavy in the DFSR chat room, just kind of updating weather, tracking that that wind, because if that forecast stays the same where, you know, the wind is going to break up for the Friday afternoon wave, I'm really going to want to be stacking a lot of those Friday afternoon guys. So I'm going to keep updating that in the chat room as well as on my cheat sheet. And then again on Twitter at Jaeger_bombs9, I'm heavy on there. I'll be putting a lot of information out, sharing some of my top plays, looking at different things like ball striking and around the green and proximity and stuff like that. So a lot of information coming on those three areas. Other than that, that's about it. I'm going to be doing a video just kind of going over my cheat sheet for anyone kind of new to my cheat sheet, because you can make your own models if you feel that some stats are a little more important than others, and I'm going to kind of go over that a little bit later today.
Awesome stuff, man. Really great stuff with the PGA. I'm looking forward to more podcasts like this. Looking forward to possibly having some U.S. Open, just being involved in the U.S. Open watching it and just ignoring my family for another reason to ignore my family for a weekend. PGA should offer the respite there. DFSR.com/MLB will get you a free 3-day trial to our projection system. That right now, that includes MLB lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. The members only chat room that Chris just mentioned, that he's in there answering questions. We're all in there answering questions throughout the day, basically every day, talking everything you want to talk about DFS related. All right, buddy, enjoy the weekend. Good luck. And we'll talk to you again, hopefully next week, when we have some more PGA stuff to talk about.
Cheers, buddy.